A mind is like a river, maybe deep or shallow, and the view is like a valley, maybe wide or narrow. In this life that brings me here, it's my quest to live it without fear, and to find the answers to some questions and carry on. I guess it's just my nature to reach for something higher. And I want to thank my maker, who keeps me so inspired. And oh, not to grow. That's always there.
From Lexington, Kentucky, that self-taught pianist, vocalist, arranger, and songwriter, and serious painter and photographer, Les McCann, with Let Your Learning Be Your Eyes. It's from his 1975 album, Hustle to Survive. Are those words very true? Les McCann was inducted into the Kentucky Music Hall of Fame in 2008. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. A lot of news in this week that has come to an end today, and so I'm sure we're going to get a fair share of what's on your mind about this week. Very, very strong opinions, I'm sure we're about to share, and I look forward to it. Call 888-874-4888 and be part of the world's greatest open forum. Let's hear what you have to say about this news-crammed week that is closing out today. 888-874-4888. We started this yesterday as an extended version, just giving a leg up on the traffic. We had lots and lots of people who didn't get in so far, but again, today we will just follow up from yesterday. Let me start in New York with Joel. Hello, Joel.
Hi, Utrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm good. You know, I haven't really had much of a chance to call over the past few weeks. I've had a lot of, you know, family obligations that so many people have had. But I have listened to the program and listened to some of the archives. And I was thinking a lot about the question that you had asked about candidate Sanders. And listened to many of the responses, many of which were thoughtful. But I thought what was missing to a large extent was the ability to place that question within an historical context. So I'd like to, you know, do that today. And what I would like to say, in effect, is that Sanders, that Bernie really isn't a socialist. And the reason why I'm saying that is it seems that there's a kind of falsity in the notion that Sanders is actually trying to win the presidency. He really isn't. And the absurdity of thinking or claiming to think that one can advocate socialism from the margins of what is really a hopelessly corporate and finance captive and Imperial Democratic Party. And, you know, however gallant Sanders' denunciations of contemporary American hyper-inequality might be, the most remarkable thing, it seems to me, about Sanders' statements about this in the campaign is really its power-serving enfeeblement of the meaning of the phrases socialism and democratic socialism. And what I mean by democratic socialism, because I thought that people were struggling to really define it, and you were constantly asking them to, you know, concretize it. What I mean by democratic socialism is that it's about collective property and popular self-governance with workers' control and real participatory democracy. Now, that's a very vague and general definition of socialism, but socialism is a very broad and diverse political philosophy and political ideology. But I think that's what ties all the socialisms, because there have been many over the past few hundred years, ties them together, that it's about some form of collective property and popular self-governance with workers controlling what they produce, how it's distributed, and how it's retailed, and all of it under the umbrella of real participatory democracy. It's really about popular control of a nation's leading economic and political institutions. In fact, I remember Martin Luther King, when he really was turning into a democratic socialist in 65, 66, 67, he called it a radical reconstruction of society itself. And he called it the real issue in life that had to be faced, and he said that near the end of his life. And when you look at Bernie's rather diluted Wonder Bread branding, democratic socialism simply means a decent welfare state on the Scandinavian model. That's fine, but it ain't socialism. You know what I mean? And the other thing that Sanders does all the time is that he always tends to, when asked to personalize this thing, tends to refer to the great American socialist Eugene Debs. But Debs went to the jail because of his opposition to World War I and was imprisoned by Wilson. And it just seems to me, when you think about something like this, that you're not going to see someone like Bernie Sanders going to prison defending against American military policy. In other words, you can't be a socialist and an imperialist. You cannot, as Sanders has done, support the Obama administration's wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Pakistan, Somalia, Yemen, and be a socialist. You cannot, as Sanders has done, vote for every military appropriation bill, including every bill and resolution that empowers and sanctions Israel to carry out its slow-motion genocide of the Palestinian people, and be a socialist. And you cannot laud, as Sanders has done, military contractors because they bring jobs to your state. He may have the rhetoric of inequality down, but he is a full-fledged member of the Democratic Caucus, which kneels before the war industry and their lobbyists. And finally, it seems to me that embrace of empire is not only a moral and an ideological problem for Sanders. It really gravely contradicts and renders mute much of his own progressive domestic social agenda that he's pushing. Because the costs of empire, everyone who has studied this knows that the costs of empire are in general distributed over the society as a whole, while its profits revert to a few within. In other words, empire serves as a device for internal consolidation of power and privilege, just the opposite of what socialists profess. And what has happened since World War II is that American military Keynesianism, spending on the military, triumphed after World War II, and it underpinned U.S. capitalist and was really designed to underpin U.S. capitalist wealth and power abroad, and to really defeat and preempt the social democratic wealthier Keynesianism at home. And the first form of government spending reinforced business rule, while the second did not, and this the power elite understood. So in a purely practical and more immediate sense, when Sanders talks about a Scandinavian-inspired social democratic homeland program, it can't be paid for without a giant rollback of the nation's massive Pentagon system, which is, you know, recipient of more than half of the nation's federal discretionary spending. So it seems to me that that we're really not talking about here. What we're really talking about is someone, you know, who he reminds me of. Maybe some of your older listeners will remember him, but he really reminds me of Hubert Humphrey. Humphrey was, and I'll finish up by saying that Humphrey, for those of your listeners who don't know, was the vice presidential candidate in 1964 when Johnson was running. He was senator from Minnesota and quite liberal in domestic. When he was a young mayor and went to the Democratic Convention in 1948, he pushed for a public accommodations and voting rights bill and demanded that the Democratic Party be associated with civil rights. And so he was associated with civil rights for most of his life and associated with really incremental liberal reforms of capital. He was a true liberal, but he was a harsh foreign policy advocate, a real advocate of Cold War policy, and refused to disassociate himself from Johnson until the end in 1968 when he ran for the presidency. That's who Sanders really reminds me of. And I think that his campaign is doing irreparable harm to the left. I know that that the Democratic Party insiders are laughing at him. He's making no demands whatsoever, and he is really fronting for Lady Macbeth, who looks like she, unless scandal hits her,
Lady Macbeth,
she's going to be in the community. I know it's funny, but. I think about her as president, Utrece,
the thought of it makes me bilious.
Utrece, I'm old enough to remember the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. We came damn close to the end, and I am telling you that this woman has never seen a war that she doesn't like, as well as money that she doesn't like, you know.
Absolutely. But one of the things that I thought very interesting, because he constantly invokes, this is Sanders now, constantly invokes the parallel or the demonstration of democratic socialism. The emblematic countries, he says, are like Scandinavia and so forth. But neglecting to understand that there is a fundamental contradiction. The fundamental contradiction is that these European nations that he highlights as examples of how democratic socialism can work are, could you say, ethnically homogeneous for the most part. Mm-hmm. When we have a profound cleavage here in the United States of race and class, and he never recognizes that it is a deep and permanent flaw, and that much of what we see as the dislocation, economic and social and political dislocation in the United States, emanates from this particular flaw, and doesn't address it except to say, well, yes, I recognize Black Lives Matter and, you know, the smattering of condescending references to these things as if they were incidental to our reality and not a critical element of it. So, and on that score, he gets a zero for me. But thanks for getting the conversation started today, Joel. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Brooklyn next. Vidal, I believe, is your name. Is it? Did I pronounce it correctly?
Vidal.
Vidal. Thank you.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Utrece and the listening audience.
Thank you so much.
I just have just a little piece of my thoughts written on paper, you know, just something short. And I'd like to read it, if that's okay.
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. It's called Resumes in the Public. The public across the nation, and particularly blacks, seem to be impressed with resumes of people rather than their ethics and respect to their work. In other words, how have their many degrees or them being a part of the bar reflected their humanitarian work? Rather than many of us being blinded by titles, degrees, or lack thereof, or how much money they have, we need to turn away from the shiny non-essentials that are constantly being dangled in our faces. It is time for us to wake up out of our hypnotic states of illusion and delirium and see past the false smiles and scripted motions of the politicians kissing and holding little black babies as a sign that they care or love us. We have to look at it as them seeing our little black children as sacrifices and as a continuum of an unjust means to unjust ends. Continue to listen to what they are saying, but more importantly, from a historic vantage point, see what they have done and continue to do. Lastly, we need to look at voting, whether Democratic or Republican, as a contract for African people to continually and willingly hand our lives over to an evil system rather than erect and master our own. Those are my thoughts.
All right. Well, thank you for that, but I need to ask you a couple of questions here.
Yes, ma'am.
Why did you write that? What was it that compelled you to write that?
Well, my experience and what I've been watching over the years growing up and interacting with people, I watch the government, and rather than look at what, you know, they just say, I look at what they're doing. And what they're doing always contradict what they say. And dealing with politics or politics, in my opinion, you have, as I say, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. To me, they're one and the same. They're on the same team. So when one drops out, the other gets their votes. So to me, that's how I've seen past my years of watching these, how politics works. I've seen this is what they do. So then the number of votes that Donald Trump picks up goes to the next Democratic, you know, elect.
But the piece that you just read us is a two-part mission that you seem to have. One is you warning us about a system that is well-organized against popular interests, but you're also calling to task a community that seems not to be pushing hard enough to oppose it and to solve the problems itself. What do you notice on that end?
I said, I notice that we continue to be in a hypnotic state, like I said, of illusion and delirium. We don't want to, I think it's based out of fear, and most of it's based out of fear. And a lot of it's based on, you know what, just go along and get along. A lot of it's based on religion, love thy neighbor. You know, I think all those things are part of it. So I think that once we get our heads together and straight and we really do focus, I know we have a lot of obstacles still trying to knock us down, for those of us who are focused, because I am a part of the UAM Freedom Party automatic, you know, system, to coin it loosely. So once we get ourselves together and really focus and understand that the fires that are behind, I think that, you know, we will begin to move as if, you know what, this is very urgent. We have no more time to keep talking about, oh, I would like to do it, but I can't volunteer today. Or, you know, we got to stop doing that. And once we see, look in the mirror and see ourselves and really face who we are and what we're doing, I think that, you know, once we get past the illusion of what's going on and face the reality of what's going on, we'll be on the right track.
Well, I want to thank you for your very profound thought today and for offering it for us to hear and share.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call. From Berkeley, Harvey, you're on the air. Harvey, are you there?
Hello, wonderful Utrice. How are you?
Okay. How are you, wonderful Harvey?
Very good, thank you. Well, because of the seriousness of the climate talks in Paris, I'd like to talk about the economic benefits of putting solar panels on your home and plugging your electric car into your solar electric installation. And besides the fact that once manufactured and installed, solar panels use virtually no water over their 20 to 25-year warranty. And here in California, that's really important because we're in drought, and the fossil fuel, the coal-fired oil, nuclear, and natural gas-fired plants are second only to agriculture in their daily use of America's freshwater resources. So it's really important to stop using that water for that and save it. And so solar panels conserve water. And also, solar panels have no moving parts to wear down and or to replace. And they emit no greenhouse gases like methane or CO2. And solar panels don't come with loud sirens and evacuation plans like nuclear plants. And solar panels are silent. They make no noise pollution. But really, the really important part is the money you'll save by going solar. Say you purchase a solar electric system for your home and it takes about 8 years to pay it off. But if you purchase an electric car and plug it into your solar electric rooftop, the money you save on gasoline, you put towards the payback on the rooftop, and that reduces it to about 4 years. And then you have 20 years of free electricity for both your car and your home. And what's that worth? Well, if you take your annual or if you take your yearly utility bill and you multiply that times 20 years, and then you do the same with your gasoline bill, you take your yearly gasoline bill and you multiply that times 20 years, that comes out to a big chunk of money. We're talking about, I don't know, $60,000-$70,000 or more. It's incredible. So I believe that over 20 years of free electricity for your home and your car, you're also reducing our carbon footprint, and that's so important at this time. And I say it really is time to get star powered. Let's get solar and save the world, because there's no profit in a burnt out planet. We got to cool the planet down, and solar panels help to do that.
Thank you, Harvey, for your contribution. You always get us thinking about the environment. Thank you so much for that. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. It is Free Your Mind Friday, and it is an open forum, and you are driving the bus. Okay, this is a time for listeners to call in and express their thoughts about the issues of the week or about anything you think is worthy of further discussion and debate. Let's talk to Ali in New York. Hello, Ali.
Hi, Idris. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm doing well, and I hope that all the listeners are doing well, too.
Thank you so much for that. That's very nice. Thank you.
Okay, I wanted to talk about Loretta Lynch, but before I say that, I just wanted to say something about Donald Trump. First of all, the Black Lives Movement is had gone to Donald Trump's where he goes for, to give his what do you call maybe the clown speeches or whatever you call maybe bozo. But one of the things that people didn't realize that we have known here in New York City, Donald, for a very long time. I wish that the Black Lives Movement will make a copy or make a big banner and just put the name of the Central Park Five, which the man took an ad in the New York Times and asked for the death penalty for these five kids. That is how we have known Donald Trump. And that should be it. It shouldn't even be talking about him in general and just going over there and yell Black Lives Matter. It's about what this man did in this city. And that says it all about him. And as a matter of fact, as everybody knows, these kids, they were innocent. They never had DNA on these kids. And the city just paid them over $40 million for the time that they spent in jail. That's what I wanted to say about him. But my thing is going back to Chicago and Loretta Lynch and what you were talking about the other day, that this woman, she's not talking about sending anybody to jail. It's about the system. And the reason that I'm bringing her up with Emmanuel, with Rahm Emanuel, is because I remember Henry from Chicago talking about when Emmanuel was running for re-election. Henry was talking about how African-American and the Latinos, which we know here in New York City, we have problems with one another. And you always talk about making people pay. And I know for a fact that Emmanuel won the election because African-Americans didn't want to vote for Chuchi Garcia. I'm not saying that Chuchi would have been better. That's not what I'm saying. It's to make, like you always said, to make people pay. And they should have made him pay just for the simple fact that this man closed 50 schools in their city and all the things that he had done. And this thing with Loretta Lynch, how can she do in any investigation. When we have a video, and at the end of the video, you see one cop coming out of a car where they already had killed Laquan McDonald on the floor, and he get out of the car. That comes at the end of the video, and he looked at him like it's an animal on the floor. And it's not about the investigation about who killed him. It's about the investigation on the criminality of those cops that they went into Burger King and pull out that video. That is a criminal act, and that no one is talking about that. That's a criminal act, because that is where we will see everything that went through for more than an hour with this young man. Loretta Lynch is an Aunt Jemima. And you know what they said about people of color? We have to be better than white people when we have a job. And if people that don't believe that, take a look what happened in Philadelphia with the Moon family. It was a black mayor, and because of the system, told him what to do, and his was black. He had to do it better. We have to be better at everything than the other people. He bombed the Moon's family. So what video do we need to see? We don't need to see a video. We don't need reports no more, because they have the proof in front of their faces, and they don't want it accepted that they're killing us like animals. They leave us on the street. We bleed to death. And here in New York City, dogs are treated better than people of color. That's what I wanted to say.
One of the things that the reason I discussed Loretta Lynch was to say it is mind-boggling that the nation's top prosecutor calls a news conference and says definitively, no person is the focus of this probe. She's not dealing with any person and anything that such persons would have committed in the course of the killing of innocent people. And this was, to me, an extraordinary thing for a prosecutor to say, to basically arbitrarily decide, unilaterally decide, that nothing has occurred here that warrants prosecution. And even if something did occur, she's not into investigating it. She will not be investigating it. Now, that to me was such a bombshell announcement. I was so sure that all of these news agencies would have found that was an extraordinary thing to do. But instead, they carried the story the way she instructed them at the very beginning. She said, the purpose of this news conference is to tell you we're launching a probe, the basis of which is to find out how we can improve the system. We are not looking into criminality. We're not even dealing with prosecutions. She actually says it. And nobody, no major news organization found that very news conference was extraordinarily unusual and, in fact, quite alarming. Because one would imagine that somebody would have the presence of mind to say, well, wait a minute. There is nothing with these killings that you are looking at in the city of Chicago. There is nothing that disturbs you, except that the system needs to be more efficient in the way it functions. This is an extraordinary thing. So the role of the media was also jarring to me, apart from the fact that the U.S. Attorney General just unilaterally and arbitrarily says there is going to be no prosecution. It wasn't even a question about it. She confirmed it.
But you know, you're something, you trees. On December, I believe it was December 3rd or December 4th, I was in Staten Island, and that was the year anniversary of the non-indictment of Pantaleo. Okay? And you have to see
Officer Pantaleo, I just need to interject, is the officer who applied the illegal maneuver around the neck of Eric Garner, causing him to die.
Yes. And what happened with the DA? Now he's in there. He took over and he won the election to go to, he's a congressman. I mean, he went to the Congress. He's a congressman now. And this is what you're talking about. They make sure, and where is Pantaleo? As a matter of fact, there were about maybe 30 or 40 of us. And most of the people, they came from the city. We crossed over on the boat to go there on that day. And I just wanted to tell you, one girl, as a matter of fact, a white woman, told me that Pantaleo has 24 hours security. He not only is getting his salary, but he also getting protection from the city. We are taxpayer money. This is, I mean, what else can we say? This is, and the woman is from Staten Island. And she said, yeah, he gets 24 hours security in his home in Staten Island. So that says it all. There is nothing else to say.
Thank you so much for your contribution today, Ali. Good to talk with you. Rosedale, Jose, you're on the air.
Greetings, my professor. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine, Jose. How are you?
I want to say I'm fine, but these things that keep popping up, it just have my blood boiling, but I'm trying to remain calm.
Good.
Now, real quickly, two things I'd like to touch on. You know, I haven't quoted anything from the Harvard Marcus Garvey in a while. So, but I hope I get the chance to do that in a moment. You know, my mind is running back to Chicago. A few weeks back, I asked you if it was possible to recall Ron Emanuel as mayor of Chicago.
Yes.
And you outlined the ways in which it could be done. And I am happy to see that the movement has started to recall this man.
Yes.
Now, I am hoping that the movement doesn't falter. I'm hoping that it holds steadfast and it avoid all those charlatanica, old civil rights, old guards, Chicago black elites. Just avoid them, their advice and their leadership, because they have a funny way of watching movements get created and then they move in and co-opt the movement, and then the movement just fizzes out at the negotiating table. And they wind up being the beneficiaries, and the movement suffers, and the people is right back to where they started. I hope the movement holds firm and demand that Ron Emanuel and his regime, they must go. Members of the city council must go because they are part and parcel of this humongous cover-up. The judicial system is to be blamed also. The religious leaders in Chicago, I did not hear their voices, and I believe that they all were complicit in this cover-up. The families, I am not taking them out of this thing because too many of the victims are relatives. They allow these attorneys, these ambulance chasers, to go after the money and telling us that it's all about justice, but it's really about the money. And they get their cut of the money, and they're sitting there waiting for another incident to happen so they can move in again and collect big time. So I'm hoping that these young folks that will create the leadership among themselves, conscious and progressive leadership, and take this movement to the limit. Don't stop until they get that man out of office, as I said, and his regime, and all the ancillary groups that is there with them, and they've created a movement, a people's movement in Chicago, so they can restore some vestiges of decency and equity in the city of Chicago. Now, in saying that, my professor, yesterday, there was some talk about the media and the role of the media and so forth. And I find oftentimes that our people, we have been so spoon-fed, we have been so conditioned to accept what we are getting from these so-called mainstream media outlets as journalism, as honesty and truth and what journalism is supposed to be about. No, they don't have a U-Tweet lead. They don't have you on one side. You know, listen, we listen to you, and a few, we understand you, we love you, we know where you're coming from, and we understand your integrity and your honesty, and we know good journalism. But most of our people don't have something to judge others by. You understand me? We know good journalism because we have been exposed to it. But the other folks out there, whatever they are getting, it just comes to them that they accept that as what it is supposed to be. But if they were exposed to you and your level of intellect and great journalism, then they would know that what they are getting out there is a travesty of decency. So, my queen, I would like to just read this to you real quick, if it's all right with you. A quote from something from Marcus Garvey that he said to us in the 1920s. Okay? Mr. Garvey said, and I quote, "We are living in a civilization that is highly developed. We are living in a world that is scientifically arranged, in which everything done by those who control is done through systems. Proper arrangement, proper organization, and among some of the organized methods used to control the world is the thing known and called propaganda." He says, "Propaganda has done more to defeat the good intentions of races and nations than even open warfare." He said, "Propaganda is a method or medium used by organized peoples to convert others against their will. And we of the Negro race are suffering more than any other race in the world from propaganda. Propaganda to destroy our hopes, our ambitions, and our confidence in self." And he goes on to say that, he goes on to say that if you have no confidence in self, you are twice defeated in the race of life. But with confidence, you have won even before you have started. Mr. Garvey, my professor, realized the problems that we were exposed to, what we were being bombarded by the enemies. And too many of our people as sucked in what has been forced into our brains, and we no longer have any control of our minds. And so all these other things that are out there is easy to infiltrate our minds and just turn us into a hybrid of what we are supposed to be as a race of people. And so, again, I thank you for the work that you have been doing. I thank you for me, as an elder, my mother always said to us as children, "You are never too old to learn." And I continue to learn from you every time I listen to you. I know I don't know it all. I know a few things, but I'm an old man, and I know I'm not too old to learn. And I thank you for staying with us as a people. You have not wavered. You have not given up on us. And after all, we are all we have got. We don't have nothing else. We have no one to love us or to care for us. We are the ones that should love each other. And the day we started loving each other more than we love the enemies, that's the day we will see what these Christians call that great epiphany. That's the day we'll turn ourselves around. And that's when we'll start moving towards that progressive movement that we all need, so we can uplift ourselves, free our minds, and become the race that God, our God, the God of our ancestors, ordained and destined for us to be. I thank you, my professor.
Thank you, Jose, for your wonderful and eloquent presentation today. Thank you so much. But also, thank you for bringing to the fore this question that I raise all the time, and that is the importance of understanding systems. Systems. Very, very important. Thanks so much. Let's hear from Patricia. Hello, Patricia. You're on the air.
How are you doing, Miss Lee?
Fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm fine. I had a lot to say, but the two callers in front of me pretty much said everything I was going to say. But, where do we go from here? Well, let's just say it is. Your Monday show, I believe it was, when you talked about the journalists and the lack of their, how would you say it, their ability to really put the information out there where the integrity of their reporting. I emailed you, and I really enjoyed what you said. And in regards to what the brother just talked about, journalists and their integrity, there is not. They lack integrity, unlike yourself. Sister Ali made a comment about the Central Park Five. Well, let me just say this and elaborate a little further. It was actually seven. And with that said, those five young men who got the settlement, they can, in fact, put an ad out. They don't need Black Lives Matter because their lives mattered when it counted in the 80s. And those young men who got the settlement, they could put out an ad, okay, themselves. They got the money the same way Donald Trump put an ad out calling for their execution. They should use some of that settlement money and put an ad out on Donald Trump as far as that go. And the Justice Department, yeah, Loretta Ranch, we live here in New York, and I think you brought that up. She were not doing her job when she was head of department when she was in New York. What do we expect her to do now? You know, she's not going to do anything. Just putting black faces like Holder and Loretta Ranch and head of DOJ, thinking black folks are going to get some justice, that's not true. Not true at all. So I'd just like to thank you once again, as always, bringing the information straightforward to us, and I continue to listen to your program, Ms. Lee.
Thank you so much, Patricia, for your call and for contributing today. I really appreciate it. You know, we have so many people on the line. I'm inclined to make the announcement even now that we will continue next week as well. If you don't get in today, certainly we will accommodate it, because I think, believe it or not, just at a time when people ought to be talking, it's the wrong people talking. Okay, we want the people to be talking, so we will devote next week to people talking. And this is very, very important to me. I always say to people, this is the purpose of radio. This is the purpose of media, to have people talk what they're thinking, say what you're thinking, and share it. So if you don't get in today, and the engineer just informed me the lines are packed, he says, and I understand it. I know people want to talk, so we will accommodate it. Don't worry, don't rush. We will get everything said, all right? So, but let's continue for the rest of the program that we have. Midge from New York, you're on the air.
Oh, hello, hello?
Hello, Midge.
Hi, oh, great. Okay, actually, I'll keep it brief because you're busy. I just wanted to point out, because in the news, I think people may have missed, that the military are asking Congress for additional funds for Africa. And I'd recommend reading a very interesting article in The Nation by Nick Turf called The U.S. Military's Best Kept Secret. And it's quite a dense article about the expansion of the American military into Africa in recent times. And I just think it's fascinating, so I just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you. Is that it?
Okay.
Is that it?
Yeah.
You don't want to share what you think about that?
Actually, also wanted to say thank you, because I listened on Monday to you were on fire about President Obama, and it was just wonderful. It was very cathartic. So I did want to thank you for that. It was
thank
great
you.
Listening. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for your call today. Sean, you're on the air.
Hey, Eutrice, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I wanted to touch upon what you spoke about earlier and some of the other callers touched on earlier with regard to Loretta Ranch Loretta Lynch and the Justice Department and the Obama administration. You know, it's funny. When I look back at the Obama administration, and I've pointed out on numerous occasions to my friends with regard to the Justice Department that they're not about justice, I always got attacked because it's like, why am I being so anti-Obama? Why am I being so anti-Eric Holder? And I said, listen, you've got an attorney general that won't bring a prosecution to one banker, one Wall Streeter that nearly crashed the entire world economy back in 2007, 2008. I said, all we get out of these guys is they've come up with some kind of financial settlement, there's a fine, and they go on their way. I said, but there's no accountability. And I said, right now, what basically the Justice Department is saying is in America, if you have money and you're part of the Wall Street clan, there's no accountability. I said, this is the same Justice Department when the Trayvon Martin shootings happened and all the shootings happened involving rogue cops. You know, all my friends said, Obama and Holder, they're going to get involved and they're going to bring us justice. I said, nothing's going to happen. Watch what I'm telling you. It's nothing's going to happen. They're going to give you a dog and pony show that they're going to investigate, but in the end, they're not going to bring any charges. There again, I get attacked. Oh, you're so anti. I'm like, okay, I'm just telling you. This is how it works. So sure enough, when they announced in all these different cases that they weren't going to bring charges, nobody said anything to me. There was like silence in the room, you know, no replies, no nothing. So now I saw, I think it was during the summer, Loretta Lynch announced that they were bringing an investigation towards FIFA, a corruption scandal investigation towards FIFA. And that just really did it for me, because I was like, well, wait a minute. She has time to bring an investigation to FIFA, an organization that's not even stationed in the United States, and bring an investigation to foreign officials, but she can't investigate, I said, cops. Killer cops out here in all of these cases and bring charges against any of these cops. I said, here we go again. And the same thing, can't bring any charges to any of these bankers, but she can go overseas and bring charges to a few people, corrupt officials, and say, well, because they use the U.S. banking system and they laundered $100 million, we can go after them. So right then and there, that told me, again, that this is another charlatan in the game of politics. You know, so then when you started talking about Loretta Lynch earlier during the week and then about the announcement she made, and this was before I even heard you say this on your station, is that I told my friends the same thing. I said, nothing's going to come of this. I said, if you listen to what she said, this is not about prosecution. It's more about looking for patterns and reform. Again, I get attacked. Next day, I listen to you and your thoughts echo mine. And I'm like, here we go. And I'm like, I don't know what it is, but this administration has got black folks bamboozled to the point where there's no sense of accountability. There's no sense of let's hold this person accountable, let's hold that person accountable. You know, what do we get out of this if we put our – there's no sense of that. It just seems like because it's Obama, because it's Holder, because it's Loretta Lynch, and they're black, we just have to support them no matter what. There's no asking any questions. There's no accountability. And I just find it amazing that they can get away with this and nobody wants to ask the hard questions and hold them accountable.
Well, Sean, where does this leave you politically?
To be honest with you?
When anybody says to be honest with you, coming.
But I'll tell you this. I'll tell you, politically, I just don't have faith in the system as it is, as it's constructed right now. I mean, I look at what's going on politically, and I like Bernie Sanders. I like some of his message, but even he, you know, as some of the points that you that Joel brought up. I mean, there are things about him that make me also question him. You know, so for me right now, politically, it just looks like it's a barren landscape. You know, you've got somebody that you're kind of interested in, but then when you start digging into their track record, you'd be like, no, I don't know if I can really support that person. So it just seems like the whole system is barren right now.
But let me ask you,
I don't have big faith in
anybody. It's a moving train, and you can't be neutral, as they say, on a moving train. So in this presidential climate and this presidential looming presidential race, 2016,
right.
What is your political response likely to be?
You know, at this moment, I haven't really thought about it. But the only – again, I don't trust Hillary. Because like Joel said, I think she's a war hawk. You know, any type of military action that's put on the table, I think she'll support it and she'll push it. So I don't trust her. I don't trust or like any of the Republicans. They all look like they're clowns to me. And again, the only person that makes half a modicum of sense, it seems, is Bernie Sanders. But again, even looking back at his record and some of the things that he's done in the past kind of make you question him. So I'll probably say this. If I had to go out there and vote, hold my nose and pull the lever, it'll probably be for him.
And that's it? You're still making decisions with regard to the duopoly, either the Republicans or the Democrats? Is there any other way?
No, I'll put it to you like this. I think if I really saw I have not studied in great length any of the third-party candidates. You know, I know you got candidates like Jill Stein, so on and so forth, but I just haven't seen the third party, and I know you've mentioned this many times on your radio show, that they to me, they just haven't made that push, you know, that push to really make themselves available in terms of the whole system, the way it's constructed in terms of the duopoly. So I haven't seen what you would call a major force coming out of that third party to say, yeah, this is the person we can put forth and we can put in the White House. I haven't really seen that. So that's, I guess, is where I am in terms of how the system is constructed at present.
And outside of, you know, political parties, is there any other political strategy you think that could work?
That's a very good question. I'll tell you what I've learned in the past 7 or 8 years. My thinking is really don't align yourself with a party. My thinking is don't align yourself with a party like it's a football team, because that's what most people tend to do. My team is better than your team. I want to see an individual, I even if it's a Republican, I don't care, to espouse some of the things I'd like to hear them espouse in terms of my way of thinking. And if that candidate espouses those things, then I would probably cast my vote for that candidate, regardless of party. So my thing is, I don't want to affiliate with a party or say, well, I'm loyal to this party because to me, you're doing yourself a disservice if you're just going to vote via party lines and not give any of the other candidates a chance to voice what they bring to the table and if their ideals mesh with your ideals. So my thinking is there's no such thing as a political party in my book anymore. It's what does the candidate bring to the table.
But guess what? Here's the reality, Sean. Mm-hmm. If you identify with a particular candidate's political point of view, that candidate is firmly enmeshed in the political party.
Well, so, and that, and again,
so here you back at square one again.
And that's part of the problem. And I've discussed this with a good friend of mine, you know, because I have one good friend where I discuss both local politics and geopolitics and world events. And it's funny because he also says the same thing, that, you know, you see a candidate that you like, but you just can't trust them because the system just seems to, you know, you get somebody that says all these nice things, and then when they get in office, they do completely the opposite of what they said they're going to do. And it turns you off the policy because it seems like, okay, I voted for this person. He said he was going to do this. Now he's in office. He's doing just the opposite. He makes an about face. So now you're left saying, well, what can you vote for? Who can you vote for?
Well, I have an entirely different view. My view is you destroy the party. And that's where you realize great power. You just destroy it because it refuses to pay attention to you, and it refuses to honor the investment that you make in it. So you walk away from it, and you bring it to its knees, and without mercy. You see, the thing is, I'm known for saying this for many, many years. You have to be ruthless and obsessive about your interests.
Right.
And we haven't arrived at that point yet where people are prepared to be ruthless and obsessive about their interests that have gone ignored, or it's one way or the other, just discarded. So what you do is you flex your political muscle with the intent of causing the greatest pain possible. And the best way to do that is to get out of the Democratic Party. Cause it to collapse. Bring it to its knees.
I agree because people are basically voting along party and racial lines. In other words, you have to feel like, you know, again, and I go back to Barack Obama, Holder, and the whole nine yards, that we have to support them because they're black and they're Democrats. And I keep telling people, no, you don't have to support them for that reason. Support them if they're doing the things that you put them in office to do. And I said, when they're not doing the things you want them to do, you got to call them out. And
Even beyond that. You don't support anybody unless you first extract from them concessions.
Right.
You're not supporting anybody.
Right.
If you can't extract ahead of time, way ahead of time, you get them to commit that this is what they are prepared to deliver for you.
Right.
Sure. Until then, you just are prepared to bring the party to its knees. No voting. No participation, and you destroy the party by leaving it. You would see what a reaction it would get. If people said, and they were very serious about it, we've done with you. We absolutely finished with this party.
That's
a very simple thing. All you have to do is just walk away. Don't participate and leave it to flounder and self-destruct. That's the best thing we could do.
But that's part of the problem, too, because, again, like I just stated, people are bound via party and racial lines. In other words, they don't want to come out of that paradigm.
That's the education we have to do, Sean. We have to get people to redefine what politics is. Politics is simply getting your needs met, nothing personal. It's absolutely strictly business.
I agree with you, Reatrice, but like I said, if you talk to any of my friends, it's personal with them.
It's like climbing Mount Everest backwards, right?
Yeah,
it's a hard thing, but
if you
have to try.
Eric Holder, but it's personal. Why are you attacking Eric Holder? If you critique the president, why are you attacking the president? If you critique Loretta Lynch, why are you attacking Loretta? They take it personal, you know?
No, that's too bad. So we will have to exercise a little bit of patience, but still maintain ruthlessness and obsessiveness about your interests. Thanks so much for contributing today, Sean. Loved your call. And that brings us to the end of our program today, with many, many more people still on the line. And so we will continue the discussion next week, because this is important. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Guns and Butter, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company.